to Simon Evans Goes to Market. Yes, hello and welcome to Simon Evans Goes to Market, Radio 4's only economics comedy hybrid. The horse of comedy mating with the donkey of economics to create a sterile mule of a programme, braying unbearably, perhaps because it got in on Bitcoin back in 2009. Every week we take a look at something that is either obviously an economic issue but not necessarily funny, like oil, or obviously funny but not necessarily economic, like death. And then we try and harness the two together and make them trot on like the tame zebras that World Banking scion Walter Rothschild trained to pull his carriage around the grounds at Tring. In this series, even rarer than a broken zebra, we look at that fabled financial unicorn, the free lunch. We're looking at philanthrocapitalists, the NHS, and social media, all providing business models that appear to offer something for nothing. This week, we look at the flip side of that magic coin and the ability of the super rich to somehow dodge the one bullet that is supposed to have everyone's name on it, tax. Joining me as ever is Tim Harford, surely the most ubiquitous presence on BBC Radio 4, though I should say his own show, more or less, has looked at the figures and determined that we are still well below peak Harford and that high levels of Harford in radio correlate closely with positive life outcomes, healthy economic development and better digestion. Please welcome Tim Harford. Hi, Tim. I imagine you, like me, have creatively minimised the amount of tax you pay on your fee for this show by minimising the fee itself.
Well, I'm afraid my tax affairs are private, Simon. It's all between me, my Panamanian accountant, and my shell company on the Isle of Man.
I'm also joined by the author of Big Data, Does Size Matter? And presenter of Radio 4's Future Proofing, Timandra Harkness. So, given that you're an expert in data, Timandra, I'd imagine your tax return is a work of art.
I prefer the term creative non-fiction. However, I would like you to admire my brand new motorbike, which I am currently riding around the stage. It's not directly relevant to data, but by having it on the programme, I have rendered it tax-deductible.
Strange how that's popular when it's in isolated examples. And, of course, I'll be speaking later to editor of Money Week, Merrin Somerset Webb, to discuss who the baddies are. Spoiler alert, I'm afraid it's us. So, today we have chosen a topic that is comedically unpromising, even by the standards of microeconomics. The single most dreaded and physically paralysing word in the language, tax. Just saying it, I feel achy and weird. How can something so lovely, sharing out the spoils and creating a fairer world for all, how can that be so disagreeable to contemplate? Yet, disagreeable it is. You may want to pay it, of course. You can all see how valuable the work of the state is when compared to whatever it is you spend your money on, which Radio 4 market research suggests is Le Creuset frying pans and artist-themed erotic fiction from the dark web. Yet, when you get your payslip through, you experience that familiar pang which turns even the most right-on lefty, even if just for a microsecond, into a raving libertarian. That's my money, you think. Taxation is theft. I need more pans. Many of the world's wealthiest and most successful companies, on the other hand, are a bit more proactive when it comes to coughing up as little as possible. Vodafone, Starbucks, the House of Windsor. They all get to enjoy our weather, our state-of-the-art transport infrastructure, and less sarcastically, our functioning free market economy and all its pre-programmed flag-waving insatiable consumer bots, arguably without ponying up quite what they should, whether by routing their revenue through exotic locations where it can lounge in a tax-free hammock, sucking daiquiris through a straw like a vampire sucking blood from a struggling economy, or by investing in palpably non-viable propositions like the British film industry. Many celebrities routinely described as national treasures are often found to be unwilling to contribute to the national treasury. But are they really doing anything wrong, or are they just playing the game? Perhaps we should start with some fundamentals. Tim, how long has tax been a thing, and have people always tried to avoid it?
Well, tax has been around forever, but until the start of the First World War, the tax burden placed on, well, even the wealthiest individual was rarely in excess of 10%. Consequently, there was relatively little incentive to dodge it. when higher taxes were usually raised to fund specific objectives, by which I mean a war. But now, the tax burden is something approaching 40% of our economy, and it's not surprising that an entire industry wielding a fearsome amount of intellectual firepower has grown up to confront and to legally avoid it.
You see, now, you mentioned tax for military campaigns. I have to say, if there was a decent war on with a good traditional enemy, I don't think I'd object. You say, what are the Spanish amassing a second armada? I pledge not only my money, but the use of my ports. It's just the way it's crept up over the years, year in, year out. It does seem to me that the frog of British citizenry is remarkably sanguine about all this as he's gradually brought to the boil.
Well, Americans would never stand for it. In the US, the idea that taxation is theft is widely discussed, even if it's yet to make the leap from bumper sticker to Congress. In fact, theft doesn't quite cover it, really, because it neglects the coercive element, the threat of force, the threat of prison if you don't pay.
Yes, tax is more like a protection racket than theft, isn't it? It's not burglary, I suppose. At least the revenue will only very rarely squat and leave a souvenir of their visit on your rug before they go, but... Even so, why are we so docile about half our dosh being sucked up by the snout of state?
Maybe it's the Viking blood in our veins, small but significant. I mean, at the other extreme from US libertarianism is the Scandinavian model. And if simply saying the words Scandinavian model isn't enough to cause you to lose your concentration for a moment, allow me to explain. Norway's tax burden is nearly 55% of economic output, and Sweden, Denmark, Finland, they're all in the same ballpark.
Which is to say, I would imagine a very nice municipal ballpark with under-turf heating, special lavatory facilities for dogs, and only the occasional unresolved murder to keep things a bit edgy and dark. But over half their earnings going in tax, this would be regarded by most Americans as a kind of internalised pillage. So where are we on that scale, Tim?
Well, in typical British form, we're somewhere in the middle. We don't pay as much tax as the Scandinavians. We don't pay as little as the Americans. But most people think that a social safety net should be paid for by everyone. Although there's always a vigorous debate between those who say the safety net is fraying and those who say the safety net is more of a luxurious hammock. Now, the typical voter would also say that roads, schools, defence and healthcare should also be paid for jointly rather than through the bracing process of open competition and haggling with ambulance crews.
Well, I mean, if roads were privately operated, for instance, the sheer number of separate tolls you'd have to remember to pay when you got back from a 200-mile round trip home to visit the family at Christmas would be enough to put you off going. It would, in fact, give you the perfect excuse not to go and... Hang on a minute, I think I may have come up with a very popular policy initiative here. I just need to write this one down. But that is tax in a nutshell. This show isn't about paying tax, it's about not paying tax. And I think I'm right in saying there are a number of ways of doing this, Tim. There is a taxonomy of tax efficiency.
Yes, there's tax planning, tax avoidance, and tax evasion. So tax planning is when you do something like pay into a pension, which reduces your tax bill by doing exactly what Parliament hoped you would do. And then tax avoidance is when you find some clever loophole. You're subverting what Parliament intended, but they can't touch you for it. Like the rock star Hot Black Desiato in Douglas Adams' books, who spends a year dead for tax reasons. And then there's tax evasion, which is pretty simple. It's lying and cooking the books, that kind of thing. Dennis Healey, who was Chancellor of the Exchequer in the 1970s, neatly defined the dividing line when he explained that the difference between tax avoidance and tax evasion is the thickness of a prison wall.
But bear in mind, Dennis Healey was a man who measured the worth of a man on the thickness of his eyebrows. It's not just individuals who avoid tax. Companies seem to do it as a matter of course, don't they?
Yeah, big companies certainly spend a lot of money working out how best not to give any more money to the government. And many of the shops on the high street are routinely called out in the press. For example, Cafe Nero paid nothing in corporation tax last year.
You see, now, that's probably down to the loyalty cards, I think. I knew there was something going on there. You can't just give away the 10th cup for free, week in, week out, as if it was water. I knew it. It's a tax dodge. They show the revenue a little wad of blue cards with the smudgy stamps, and they shrug and they go, see, no money. It's just...
It might be that. It might be that, although I think the official account is that they'd made previous losses and therefore they weren't due to pay anything.
Well, I'm sure that's very reasonable, but there is a double standard here, isn't there? I mean, I, for example, couldn't just rack up a load of debt and then avoid paying any tax, could I? Could I?
Well, I'm not a tax lawyer, Simon, but if you were sitting on a million unsold copies of the Simon Evans Live at the Theatre Royal DVD, you might be able to write that off as a loss.
Yeah, I don't know if you've ever seen a double garage full of an increasingly obsolete media format. It is a bone-chilling sight, mind you. I still have two crates of Tommy on 8-track to shift. I'm sure there was going to be a revival of that.
All these things are possible, but generally these manoeuvres of effectively operating at a loss to avoid tax are a lot easier for a big global company than for an individual.
Well, you see, I think that's the reason these tax stories annoy people so much. It's not the morals, it's the scale. Whether it's Starbucks paying less tax than a kid with a paper round or Jimmy Carr claiming to be an island in the Pacific... It's the different standards, isn't it? That's what riles.
Yeah, and they're able to do it because when your turnover's in the hundreds of millions or the billions, it makes financial sense to spend a lot of money on creative accounting. It's not really possible for your average Joe on the street. For most normal people, they earn an average wage, probably paying tax to PAYE. The only option open to them, if you want to reduce your tax bill, is, well, all-out tax evasion, petty acts of VAT fraud, or doing work cash in hand.
Or filling up a camper van with French cleaning wine and sneaking it through the nothing to declare lane at customs.
No, there is also that.
Of course, a huge money raiser would be to tax anyone who says nothing to declare but my genius to the customs inspector. Flat rate, £1 million. But can we blame people whose hard work and cheekbones have elevated them out of the slurry the rest of us live in for wanting to hang on to their loot? I mean, you know, they still pay a pretty big whack, right?
Well, it's hard to say what the important facts are, but essentially, yes. Rich people do pay quite a lot of tax. The top 1% of income taxpayers, that's people who earn in excess of £160,000 a year, currently pay more than a quarter of all income tax. And by comparison, this is according to the Daily Telegraph, I should say, by comparison, under James Callaghan's notoriously high-tax Labour government back in 1976, the top 1% paid just over a tenth of total income tax receipts. But there are other forms of tax. There's not just income tax. There are forms of tax that hit poorer people a lot harder. There's council tax, for example, or cigarette duty. And don't even get me started on the national lottery. And given all this and the fact that people seem to be able to find loopholes, it's not surprising that everyday working people get annoyed at the system.
Indeed. I spoke to Merin Somerset Webb, editor-in-chief of Money Week, to find out if public indignation with large-scale tax avoidance is justified. And I started by asking her whether we're right to focus on the big multinationals.
Tax avoidance is not just about big companies. It's about the economy as a whole. You know, pretty much everyone's avoiding tax one way or another.
Yeah.
You know, there are figures that suggest that, for example, over a third of the people who do self-assessment forms are not paying their taxes properly. And we know that when we look at the data from, for example, buy-to-let investors, we see that a very significant minority is not paying tax on the rents they receive, etc. So tax avoidance goes throughout society in the UK and presumably everywhere else as well. It's a national activity. Everyone's at it at the end. So, you know, who are the villains? Everyone's a villain here.
So there we are. Tax evasion, it seems, is a national pastime. Although, as national pastimes go, it's very rarely celebrated on tea towels. Next, I asked Merin about why the system is so complicated. Wouldn't a simpler system be easier to deal with, a bit less loophole-y?
I think it is so complicated because it is so complicated. And that what I mean by that is that it's impossible to simplify. And you have to be an incredibly brave government to move forward with proper tax simplification because the perverse effects will be extraordinary during the transition phase. And our governments are almost always too fragile to be able to do that.
And if you were to simplify it, of course, there would be winners and losers, and the losers would be so much more vocal than the winners.
They would be very vocal, but, you know, a very simple tax system is something that everybody wants. Everyone's always demanding a simple tax system, so it's not like there isn't a majority opinion saying we must simplify our tax system, but like almost everything that we believe our governments should do, it's too hard.
Too hard, even for our government? Surely not. Have they asked David Davis? He nailed everything else.
Merin's right. It's really impossible to understate how complicated the tax system can get. I mean, VAT is really weird. So cereal bars attract VAT at 20%, but flapjacks enjoy a zero rate. Vegetable chips are tax-free if and only if the vegetable in question isn't a potato. Dried fruit is subject to VAT unless you're planning to put it in a cake, in which case it's VAT-free. And don't get me started on gingerbread men. Gingerbread men, chocolate icing attracts a substantial VAT liability on a gingerbread man unless the icing constitutes the eyes. You look confused, Simon. And not just the UK, by the way. This isn't a purely British issue. The Americans have this problem as well. Simon, have you ever heard of a pillow pet?
Is that something to do with lice?
No, it's a stuffed toy stroke pillow, and the slogan really says it. It's a pillow, it's a pet, it's a pillow pet. It's catchy. Well, I like it anyway, but poses a dilemma for US customs. For the purposes of levying a tariff, is it a pillow or is it a tariff-free cuddly toy pet?
Sounds a bit like a prototype battery-free sex robot, to be honest, but whatever it is, best not to mention pillows. We're doing a whole episode about tax. The audience at home are already teetering dangerously close to unconsciousness. In terms of big multinationals, what are the main complications and loopholes that they do exploit to avoid corporation tax in particular?
Well, the basic idea is to frame your business in such a way that the profits that you make are made in the lowest tax jurisdiction possible. There are various ways to do this. The most famous is called sandwiching, including the recently popular double Irish Dutch sandwich.
Double Irish Dutch sandwich. Now, that I do like the sound of. That is a kind of whiskey pancake full of hash, presumably, is it?
Sadly not, although you may want to eat one by the time I've described it to you. So the basic idea of the double Irish Dutch sandwich is...
Yes.
You want to set up a company in Ireland that owns another company in Bermuda that licenses intellectual property, potentially via the Netherlands, and then routes it back to Ireland. And the effect of this is that one of your Irish companies is making all of your global profits because it owns your intellectual property, but the Irish government doesn't recognise that the Irish company is actually domiciled in Ireland. Therefore, the Irish government doesn't require you to pay any tax in Ireland, and nobody else requires you to pay any tax anywhere else. Clear?
Yeah, no, that's fine. Absolutely. I must admit, I'd not previously thought of Holland or Ireland as being tax havens. You normally think of tax havens as being sunny places with dazzlingly white sand beaches and shady people. Ireland is more famous for shady beaches and dazzlingly white people.
We were all surprised when the Isle of Man featured so heavily in the recent Paradise Papers leak. I'm sure it's nice for a weekend, but I don't think it was anyone's idea of paradise.
That's interesting, you know, because, I mean, I've been to Jersey, Guernsey. My experience of these islands is that the residents are lovely and the way of life is charmingly unhurried, and they all seem oddly oblivious to the fact that they're sort of living on a financial volcano. They all just live in nice little pebble-dash semi-detached houses and go to the pub, and every so often a dragon comes out of a cave and selects one of them for its dinner, and they all politely look the other way. It's kind of... I don't blame the Isle of Man. They probably realise the only way it can attract people and money to downtown Douglas is to basically let them do what they like, isn't it? Tax? Nah, don't worry about that. Speed limit? Nah. Your cat's got no tail? We won't ask any questions. It's fine. Much of the problem is actually to do with the fact that our traditional tax base has changed and companies are now more reliant on data than they are on factories. How do you tax the flow of information? Let's ask Tamandra Harkness. Tamandra, has the emergence of data changed the nature of tax avoidance, would you say? I imagine, though, that the availability of data and the ability to track it now has made things much, I don't know, easier for the avoiders or easier for the revenue?
Well, probably easier for the avoiders in the sense that it's much harder to specify what is it that you're taxing. I mean, for example, if you talk about the value of data and the value of the fact that companies know all about us and can use that knowledge to sell adverts to us that are more effective. Yeah. Well, how do you value that data? What is it worth and where is it? Is it living on servers somewhere? Does it live where it was collected from us? Does it live where we live? So it's hard to value it and it's hard to say where it is. And any kind of digital intellectual property like that, it's even harder than a physical thing to say where it is and who should be taxing it.
So in terms of the arms race, what advantages have the Inland Revenue gained from the technological advances?
The flip side, of course, is that just like everybody else, the Inland Revenue can know far more about us than we realise. And they actually have a massive computer called Connect, which is there to put together data about us, not just stuff from bank accounts and credit cards, but things that we post on social media. So when you post a photograph of your new pedigree dog, they'll note that down. When you tweet about marvellous cash in hand gig you've just done, that will be down
there.
When
you meet somebody in a service station car park on the M62, would that be in there?
Well, yeah, because you're carrying your mobile phone and it's got a microphone and a camera in it, so it's entirely possible that that's in there. I mean, Google Earth, right? You just suppose you had a new swimming pool outside your house on the south coast. Google Earth will see that. And if you're filing suspiciously low income, the tax man might look that up and go, well, how did he pay for that enormous blue swimming pool with the... what's that shiny thing sunbathing on the side?
We actually have an enormous tree, which is... It disfigures our Google Earth presence, I have to say, whenever I look at it. It's a copper beech. It's nice enough, but it does. It's a big... You know,
did you choose it especially for the reflective qualities of its leaves?
You get underneath that and you can do as much your shady transactions as you want, I tell you. Thank you very much to Amanda Harkness, ladies and gentlemen. So, we find ourselves in a new world with a changed tax base and companies who are ever more able to exploit the complicated system, and you'd assume quite reasonably that governments around the world would want to do everything they could to squeeze the tax out of these companies. But it appears that that isn't always the case, is it, Tim?
Indeed. I mean, some governments are pretty open about the fact that they want to attract multinationals to do business on their shores, and so a competitive tax system is the way it's often phrased. You know, they want these businesses there regardless of whether they pay their taxes or not, because all this tax avoiding activities mixed up with, you know, proper business, real wealth creating, job creating economic activity. For example, Ireland was recently forced by the European Commission to collect tax from Apple. They actively don't want to tax Apple because they know Apple's there in part for the tax perks. But perhaps surprisingly, tax avoidance is popular in Ireland. According to an opinion poll from the Irish Times, 47% of the Irish public don't want Apple's tax money.
Well, they don't need it, do they? Not with Mrs. Brown bringing in so much now.
I mean, there is method in this. Governments like Ireland's are thinking that if a big multinational moves in, other companies are going to come too, suppliers, advisors and so on, and they'll follow suit and they will pay tax. And it's worth remembering that everyone who works for these companies, they've got to pay tax. They pay VAT, they pay income tax. And Apple in Ireland, it's not some weird isolated case. Amazon has recently announced that it's looking for a site in America to set up a new HQ. And American cities are falling over themselves to woo it. For example, Chicago has said that if the internet giant moves in, the state of Illinois will refund all the state income tax that Amazon employees make. They're not going to give it to the employees, they're going to give it straight to Amazon itself.
God, that is disappointing, isn't it? Chicago, once the home to proud gangsters like Al Capone, now sucking up to Amazon. It's pathetic. What are the politicians going to do about this? I mean, there's obviously a race to the bottom. Politicians are talking endlessly about wanting to close loopholes, but do they really want to do this, or do they just all want Amazon to build its HQ on their little nest?
This sort of thing does require international cooperation, which, frankly, is not a fashionable thing at the moment. The OECD, this club of rich nations, they've been talking about rationalising the tax system for a long time. They seem to be semi-serious, but I'm not sure anyone's heart's really in it.
Maybe what we need to do is simulate an alien invasion, because traditionally that brings the nations of the Earth
together,
doesn't
it? That always works, doesn't it?
Yeah. Some sort of cooperative mindset triggered. I honestly think, if we assume for a moment that the UK government do in fact want to close the loopholes, should we consider other ways of taxing? Are there other approaches to raising revenue which have not been tried, which would minimise the opportunities for clever accountants to close loopholes, which would just simplify the whole code? Could we, for instance, reintroduce the window tax? That was quite a popular one, wasn't it, a couple of hundred years ago? And that would be quite Apple-friendly, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Window tax, not windows tax. They taxed buildings based on the number of windows they had, which wasn't a perfect solution because people just bricked up their windows. So London was filled up with dingy buildings, but it At least it shows us you don't just have to go for income or corporate profits. There are other options.
I have encountered one which I quite like the sound of. It's land tax. It has quite a decent bit of history. I think it was originally mooted in the late 19th century in America, and it was actually the basis of the board game Monopoly. I don't know if you're aware of this. Monopoly was originally devised in two versions. You could play one version in which land value was not taxed, and you became aware that gradually it all accrued to one individual who would develop a sort of rapacious streak and everyone would be bankrupted, and the other version in which tax was used in order to moderate the gains of the landowner, and in that game a more equitable outcome was achieved. And the idea was that these board games would teach people the value of a land tax, and it reminds players of the dangers of letting a dog run a hotel in Mayfair. That's about... But I do think a tax on land values, and specifically on the rentable value, it would be more fair, obviously, because the poor would pay very little and the rich would pay a greater share. But also, it's actually much harder to avoid, because while it might be quite easy to hide your money in Bermuda, along with all those planes and ships that disappear on the Channel 5 documentaries I've been watching, you can't take land there. It's actually pretty hard to move land unless you're an asteroid or a North Korean nuclear boffin.
Now, Simon, I'm impressed. You have obviously been studying the land value tax book. You drunk the land value tax Kool-Aid, the whole thing. I mean, it is, I have to say, very appealing on paper. There are a few questions about the practicalities of it. How would you assess the rental value? And there is the small point that nobody has ever really done it anywhere in the world, which, I mean, maybe it would work. You never know.
Also, of course, millionaires being what they are, they would, again, just like they have their offshore floating tax islands, they would probably create some sort of ability to hover or something.
Yeah. And, I mean, Amazon are already developing vast floating airship warehouses, and, you know, maybe that's in anticipation of this idea.
Ah, well. But more to the point, it appears that nothing is quite as it seems in the world of tax avoidance. Governments quite like having the kind of corporations and individuals in their countries that are both cunning and creative enough to amass fortunes in the first place and to skip past the clumsy lunges of the state on the way to the bank. Of course, they want to raise their dough one way or another, just like any breadhead does. But as Louis XIV's finance minister Jean-Baptiste Colbert once said, the art of taxation consists in plucking the goose so as to obtain the largest number of feathers with the least amount of hissing. So what have we discovered? Well, HMRC are following us on social media, but they've never once liked one of my tweets. Absolute bastards. Dried fruit isn't subject to VAT if it's destined for a cake. So if you want to save money, make sure you let the shopkeeper know that after eating the fruit, you intend to defecate into a Magimix. Libertarians around the world are planning to live on floating ships in international waters where they won't have to pay tax, which sounds good, but if you've ever seen the film Waterworld, it will be very, very boring. You've been listening to Simon Evans Goes to Market. Thank you and good night. You've been listening to Simon Evans Goes to Market with me, Simon Evans, Tim Harford, Merrin Somerset-Webb and Timandra Harkness. The show was written by me with Benjamin Partridge, the researcher was Andrew Wright and the producer was Richard Morris. It was a BBC Studios production.